Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's funny, like fast forwarding to like now, I'm in a place where I'm learning to love my body in a more general sense. So like now it's less so about my body compared to other people's, but it's like accepting that my soul, my spirit is here in this physical container. And just this whole thing of like, I am not my body, but I'm also not separate from it.
Welcome to The Body Protest.
In this podcast, we combine storytelling and science to better understand our relationship with our bodies. I'm Honey Ross.
And I'm Nadia Craddock. And this is season four.
Three, two, one.
Hi, body protesters.
I forgot what we said for a second. And it's like, oh my God, I've forgot my line.
I mean, the fact that we lost it at the 3, 2, 1 is it's a new record for us. But it's,
I think we can be forgiven because it is the last episode that we are recording of the year. And we are tired.
Absolutely. I feel like, I can't believe we're here. But also, what a year. What a year. We've made it through. We've made it.
I'm so proud of us. Like, I am so proud of us for making the podcast, making it through together. I think we've had some really wonderful chats. I know we have more to come. It's that weird thing of like end of year feels like.
I know it's not the end of the season, but it is the end of the year. But I know exactly what you mean in terms of it being like, I want to do a recap of all of our wonderful conversations, our wonderful guests, but it's like, we're not there yet. I think also because we have spoiler alert, or I don't know if it's a spoiler, but like, I don't know, insight to the podcast. We have recorded all of our episodes. So I think we mentally are like, we have finished, but there is more to come.
Yeah, we are like cleaning our desks up. Yeah, we have a really special episode today, but I would like to get you to introduce it, Nadia.
Yeah, I absolutely love this episode and our guest. We spoke to Bronze, who is someone I met at a Vogue workshop a few months ago, maybe now at this point. I haven't done Vogue for a long time. It's been a couple of years, but I went along, I felt really drawn to it, and it was a time where it felt a little safer than right now to be out and about and being in a class context. Omnicron didn't feel, is it Omnicron? I feel like
Omicron?
I say it wrong each time.
Mr. Omicron. Omicron.
Yeah, Mr. him. I don't think it had quite landed. So yes, I went to this class and just felt really connected to Bronze, and they were so generous even in the workshop, sharing a lot of their own experience and relationship to Vogue and to ballroom, perhaps more specifically a little bit of the history about ballroom. And it's something that I've always really wanted to get on the podcast to have a bit of that conversation, because it's been something that's been really meaningful to me, but not really knowing how to do that and connect it in a way that feels right. So yeah, I'm just so glad that Bronze was able to join us. I was so excited when they said yes.
Well, no, you were like, should I ask? Like, are you?
Yeah, I was very,
very rarely
nervous.
You're like, I don't know, maybe I will, maybe I won't. Like, it felt like it felt like a blind date. Like, it was very exciting.
Yeah, I was very nervous to ask. I was like, oh no, then I don't know. I've only obviously met them once, but I'm so glad I asked, because it's a beautiful, beautiful conversation.
It's such a beautiful conversation. And I think I'm so glad we finally get to have a conversation about Vogueing and ballroom, because I want to ask you a question on this, but like, I think it means it's been a part of your life. And I think every time we have conversations on the podcast about like community and queer community, I always look at you and think about your experience in ballroom and like and having that community. And like, I'd love to ask how you got into ballroom, because I feel like it is a whole like, it's like your secret identity of like your kind of like your dancing background. It's very like, you know, it's beautiful and magical.
Yeah, of course. And I think I've always been a bit shy about talking about it, because it's also trying to navigate if it's something that is something that I should be talking about, or and does it belong to other people more. But as Bronze was saying, and how they articulate their relationship to Vogue, is very much like speaking from your own experience and what it has meant. So I used to dance a lot as a kid, as you know, like that used to be a very big part of what I did and like my identity. And then I then was very unwell for a very long time, and I just completely closed that chapter. And then the year before I started Vogue, or found Vogue, or found ballroom, was I was living in the States, and that year was quite pivotal for me and was a big part of like my eating disorder recovery. And I gained quite a significant amount of weight in that year, which was good, like it's not a bad thing, but it was definitely something that I kind of gained the weight and my mind hadn't quite caught up with it.
It's a significant thing, especially like on the recovery journey.
Yeah, and it was, I looked visibly very, very different from the start of that year to the end of the year. So then, but anyway, came back, and there was, it was interesting in terms of how I found it, because it wasn't, I wasn't looking for Vogue specifically, but I was looking for community, I think. So I had moved back to the UK. I didn't really have a network or any friends where I was then living and working. And so I thought, I just need some hobbies. I've only really made friends through hobbies before. And so I was like, okay, let me just do it. And I was doing loads of different things. And then came across a Vogue class and loved it. I think it felt really good. And it was really the first time I'd danced in any kind of meaningful way, probably in about a 10-year period. And it was dancing not in a way to feel, to be good at it, but to kind of feel in my body. And I think it allowed for a lot of exploration in my body, which was really important at the time. And it was such a huge part of community for me. And I'm talking about it in the past tense, because it's not something that I do now. I think for many reasons, I'm a big champion and advocate of the ballroom community. It meant so much to me. I think lots of different factors come in, and I think we'll still support it, I love going to balls, but I think I got to the point maybe where I was like, I'm never going to walk a ball, which is fine. I think looking back at it was something that was such an amazing thing to be part of and to experience. And so I think that's why I just wanted someone from that scene who's in the scene in a more active way than me. I always felt that even when I was doing it, was very much on the periphery. Like, I was not in a house. I was not in, like...
What I take away from hearing you talk about this is, like, it was such a pivotal time and space, and it was something that offered you, one, a reconnection to your body, and two, a reconnection to dance, and how all of those things are so symbiotic. And, like, it just gave you a space to be able to, one, feel, and also having that community support. Like, to me, it feels like everything that we've always talked about on the podcast, that time in your life embodied that.
Yeah, completely. And it was community first and foremost. Like, that was like the biggest piece. The dance piece was secondary, but in a way that was very helpful to me in terms of like feeling in this like new body, in a body that I had not been in before, and trying to work out how that might feel. And it kind of gave me a little bit of a space to explore that a little bit in a like very supportive way.
Getting to meet that new version of yourself through joyful movement is really liberating. And getting to, you know, we always talk about like how healthy it is to see a body in motion, and like to see your own body moving, just to come to terms with it. It's an incredible tool.
Yeah, completely. And I just, yeah, can't wait for everyone to listen to what Bronze have to say.
Yeah, so I guess I will start where we met, because I'm always like, where do I start? Which is at a Vogue In workshop that was teaching in Bristol, which I suppose has been a big part, if not the main part in many ways, of my life in the last 5 or 6 years or so. So like, yeah, voguing and ballroom. Voguing being like a dance-based art form that comes from that community and culture. So I've been like in more later years, like teaching and performing, in earlier years, obviously just like learning, meeting people, discovering myself most of all. My house name is Abloh, named after the late Virgil Abloh. We opened the house a couple years ago and then it was like locked down pretty much straight afterwards. So it's been very much given house of reflection and internal growth. Yeah, from London, based here until Friday. I'm moving to Glasgow. Yeah, I need newness, new environment, new space. It's very dense here in London, both because it's London and also because I've been here for most of my life. And I just, yeah, I feel myself expanding and I need the space to do that. So I'm in this kind of big question mark phase.
Yeah, wow. I didn't realize you're moving up, but I completely hear you on like sometimes just needing a change of scene and like having like a new chapter. I think that's exciting. It can kind of, it can give a new spin on things, right?
Yeah, very exciting.
Oh my goodness. I don't know if you can hear that rain, but it is really hammering in at my window panes. It's like quite alarming. Really happening over here. So Bronze, you obviously mentioned ballroom in that intro and how we met, which was, I hadn't been to a workshop or anything like that for a long time, so all through the pandemic, and it was just such a wonderful experience. So I wonder if we could have a bit more of a conversation about ballroom, the ballroom scene. I wonder how you first got into it and talk a little bit about what ballroom means to you as well.
Sure. Yeah, whenever I do workshops, I'm always like, it's really important to like talk about like history and the culture. Mm-hmm. Obviously both so people can learn, but also I found for my own integrity. But at the same time, it's also overwhelming because it's like we could sit here and talk for a few days and then still only cover like a tiny bit. So I found it, yeah, helpful to just start, I guess, from my experience, which ultimately is all I know. So yeah, take everything just like with a pinch of salt, and it's just like my experience, my perspective. So yeah, I just always like to say, for anyone who wants to know about ballroom and voguing, ask as many people as you can. So I guess like when I was 21, like literally on my actual birthday, I was sitting around surrounded by my friends, my family, like all these people I love, having nice food, having a drink. I just had my first tattoo. And it was really interesting being in this space where I was like, oh, I kind of like have all the boxes ticked, but I'm still unhappy. So like, I guess for background, the kind of 10 years or so before that, like roughly, I've been suffering like depression, addiction, all these kind of like physical ailments, I guess relationship issues, you could say, which arguably everything's a relationship issue. Yeah, all these things which would come in waves. And it was, yeah, that was like a turning point for me, because it was actually like the next day I asked my mum for the number of this person that they'd mentioned a few weeks ago, who was like, I don't know how to describe her, but like, yeah, like a healer, a guide, a coach, a naturopath, homeopath, multidisciplinary, amazing person. But essentially I started, yeah, to work with her. And she was the first person that I remember, but definitely like professional, or someone that I like trusted, that was like, all of these issues you have are connected, for one. And secondly, that there's nothing like bad in you that we need to like cut out or get rid of. It's just changing a relationship with these things, deciding what to take on and what to leave behind. And essentially that was the first time in like a while that I had hope that things could change, as well as like an actual way to do it. So it wasn't just like, oh, I know I'll get better, but how? It was like, okay, cool. Fast forward about a year later is when I started voguing. I honestly don't know how. I mean, I know now it was like, you know, just the way the universe works. I remember seeing this movement in the background of a music video, having no idea what it was, but it was like, had this resonating feeling, like I could just feel it in my body, like I got goosebumps. And my best friend, basically we both like had kind of like contact, I guess, or like an awareness of voguing without really knowing what it was. And yeah, voguing kind of drew us towards it. And then I just at a point worked up the courage to like look for a voguing class, which like even before that, like I went to like I went to another dance class somewhere because like I was really I basically spent a year like from 21 to 22 trying to rediscover passion and joy and creativity and just all the things which I'd lost along the way and just kind of had been dulled out by like depression and drugs and just blah. So there was a lot of classes I didn't go to. It'd be like just getting out the door is a challenge. But yeah. And then through there, through the classes, I met other people in the scene, started like going to like practices, I think the oddball here and there. I don't know, I just felt called towards it. I guess like initially like the movement side of things. But then through meeting the people, it was like the first place I found community. Not like right away, like I found like people I resonated with and like friends who later became family. But as I, yeah, explored, I guess, the scene and found like other queer, black, gender non-conforming people, which I didn't realize how much I was missing until like I found it.
I just want to jump in and ask, do you remember what the videos were where you saw
yes.
the movements?
So the first one was... Oh my god, it was by Leif. I think it was, it was doing a little what now knows like hand performance. I think it was soda. And okay. Then there was another music video, Wavy by Mickey Blanco. I think there was like explicitly voguing in it. There's like one point where they do like a backward hand roll on the table, but that was more, but like essentially like seeing someone who I just like felt this like my lens, my soul, my everything just like expanding yeah. and just being like, oh wow, because I'd always been in, I've been blessed, like truly blessed through even the darkest times to have like these angels in my life, whether it's like a person on the street or whether it's like a friend, like I'd always like change social groups like kind of every year, not methodically, but just because like I would change or get bored. But there would always be like, I'd connect like 80% with that group or those people, but then I would always be like, feel like the only this or the only that.
But there's always something holding you back from giving that full 100 in those connections
in a way, or if not giving, I think I would often like give 100 or often give too much in fairness,
right? But, and not feel it reciprocated
or just not feel it like seen. Like I think people would often like appreciate it and get it like to the best they could, so it wasn't anything to do with them, like they were loving people. But like I don't know, when there's like, I think the thing I found through in Ballroom is like having people who I just didn't have to like explain a lot of things to, and like things which I thought were specifically to do with me, but were actually, say, for example, to do with like a queer black experience, which like isn't like one thing. But yeah, because I've always known, well, I've always like felt like I was a weirdo and was always like felt othered for one thing or another, which had its pros and cons. But it was just, yeah, a big step in being able to discern what was actually to do with me and what was to do with like people's perceptions of me.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think a lot of people also would be able to relate to that to some degree in terms of feeling like they're not seen fully by the people that they're around, and not necessarily that it's anything to do with them, but trying to work out like where you fit in the world. I think that's like a perpetual struggle, right? Trying to work out where we all belong. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about Ballroom and the different Vogue categories for people who don't know, so who are perhaps less familiar, and then maybe hear, Bronze, from you how you connected to the dance form and maybe to the particular categories and what that might have meant to you.
So yeah, again, like everything is just like a very like skimmed overview.
Yeah, of course.
I guess, yeah, my way in was through voguing. Which is like a performance category in Ballroom. I guess like Ballroom itself evolved from drag pageants. So if you think, yeah, like pageants, like competitions where you, again, depending on who you ask, either show your best self or like an image of yourself. But like, yeah, within, I guess, this specific community, which was like a, yeah, LGBT community. And then Ballroom itself, like modern Ballroom, is essentially considered to, I think, generally have started when Crystal LaBeija, I'm really bad with dates, so I'm going to say I think around the 60s, basically was like tired of the colorism and white supremacy in that scene and space. So she went off and, I guess, yeah, started their own thing for like Black and Latino and PSE. And this is, again, my dates. Yeah, Vogan basically, essentially, my point is like it wasn't there at the beginning, per se. Like it came around later. It kind of evolved from runway and fashion. And because like even the name, like Vogue magazine, is considered to have come from, there's like two kind of origin points that I've heard. One being Paris Dupree coming out on the runway with a Vogue magazine and imitating the poses to the beat. Another being that it came from, like started in like prisons, which I guess could both be true. And this is often the thing I found when like doing research into this stuff, like, because even if you go back into like the OGs that are still around, like people have very different stories and they're not necessarily always conflicting, but yeah, I guess people have different experiences. But that said, there's also the difficulty in, I guess, archiving or passing down this information, because it's largely, I guess, like an oral tradition. Like it's passed down, yeah, like through word of mouth and through experience, like through being there. And in part because I guess I'm here in London as opposed to in New York, where arguably more so, actually definitely more so, because of the amount of people that were like, in my opinion, in my personal opinion, murdered by the AIDS crisis and by people deliberately not doing anything, which has been, yeah, a large part of like the loss around many things, but also information. And yeah, so category wise, I guess, yeah, there's loads and loads and loads of categories, and there's like ones being changed, ones being added, ones being lost, etc. At the main kind of groups, you have like face and body. With a lot of categories, it's pretty much like what you have and then also how you sell it. And also these things are all like so subjective, because like some people tell you like, oh, you have to have this for face, you have to have this for body, and then you'll see someone getting grand prize who ain't got that. And like, but then, and then we've also got like the colorism and the white supremacy and the misogyny, and that everything that's in the outside world is also in ballroom. And yes, face, body. Then you have realness, which is, I guess essentially about convincing the judges that you are your straight and or cisgender counterpart, which like is, I guess, an extension of like what a lot of people like lived and still do live through daily, which like a lot of us do to some extent in terms of altering how we present and act in the world for survival, safety, comfort, etc. And then you have, yeah, like the runway categories, so the fashion categories, which sometimes will be like about, you'll have like different actual runway walk categories. And then some will be there's like eyewear and shoe wear categories, where it's more presenting the garments or what you've made, la la la. Then, yeah, performance categories, which is what I guess has got the most reach mainstream wise, which, yeah, voguing falls under. So, yeah, with voguing, there's like three main styles nowadays. Old way, formerly known as pop, dip, and spin, which I prefer the name. Yeah, like, because voguing before has been called performance. It was originally like poses, and more poses, which evolved from like, yeah, doing a runway walk and posing at the end. Yeah, and then new way. So basically around the 90s, I guess, is where it split into like, it's kind of three category groups. Because you'd have like the newer school, newer generation of people walk in who started more and more to do things quite differently. So to judge it fairly, both because like some people like, even the movements were just like so very different. Like a common feature is stretch. So like contortionism, essentially, like flexibility. And I guess also looking at how like the influences of voguing was very like influenced by pop culture at the time, like what people aspire to, what people dreamed of or excited to be, what just influenced them. So as that changes over the years, so has the movement and the music, which is also like these beats all feed into each other. So it was like old way, new way. Then Vogue Femme, which was originally, I think, called Femme Queen Performance. Femme Queen, again, there's a lot of nuances to the term. It's generally used in short to mean trans women, but like it, yeah, again, like it, there's more to that, because the categories would often be split by like gender slash sexuality, groups. Within Vogue Femme, there's like two kind of main styles. You have soft and cunt, which is like, to me, like it kind of gives like, you can see the roots of Old Way more. It's more, I don't know as the name would apply, yeah, soft, like flowy, like gentle, but also still fierce. And then Dramatics, which is like a lot more, I mean, as the name implies, dramatic. Someone described it really well to me at a talk once. It was Daniel Revlon, I believe. And he said, soft and cunt is like the girl or child in the mirror, like wearing her mother's dress, like looking in the mirror, like feeling all cute and sensual. And then Dramatics is like the one waiting for you outside of school to fight you. Yeah. But yeah, that's a very non-exhaustive intro to the categories.
No, thank you so much.
That's amazing. Because it's, I know there's so much in there. We could have like long in-depth conversations about like any one of these, like one of these topics, but really appreciate you giving us a bit of an overview. And like, which one do you resonate with most in terms of like category? Which one
speaks to you?
Yeah, it speaks to you and your body, right?
Yeah.
And how you move.
It's a super interesting question at a super interesting time. Because I'm
okay,
I as I prepare to like jump into hyperspace with this move into Glasgow, but really another dimension of my life and myself, I'm finding, yeah, like with performance, creativity in general, Vogue and ballroom, everything, I'm just in this like, who and what am I and why space, which is really good because it means that I can find out. I remember when I came in, I think the first classes I went to were New Way classes. That's all that was like I could find at the time. So I was Benjamin and Milan's New Way class. And then at that class, I met Maya and Diva, Diva Mugler, who I guess is like my first ballroom mother. Shout out to Diva. The way they were moving in the class was very different. I now know it was Old Way, but I was just like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, that's for me. Coupled with, interestingly, at the same time, I looked up like videos of the different styles. I saw New Way and I was basically like, I love that actually maybe the most, but I can't do all that shit. So that was a limiting belief that made me choose that. And then similarly with Vogue Femme, I was like, oh yeah, that's really cool. I was like, I don't feel feminine or like flowy enough to do that. I think this is interesting looking back and being like, I was like, yeah, I can't do that or that. So I'm going to go with that.
Whereas do you think in this kind of liminal space you're in now of like this period of transition, are you thinking about entering new categories and maybe pushing yourself and trying?
Yeah, I'm kind of, so it's interesting because I was like doing New Way classes, then going into Old Way practices. And also like, I personally believe like voguing is voguing. There are different categories, but like every person's style is different if they're like really getting into it. Like, cause you'll often find, as with a lot of dance styles, as with a lot of creativity, as with a lot of life, people copy, which like at first is obviously how we learn. It's like how we learn to speak. But then it's really taking that next step and the vulnerable, scary step of like being like trying new shit. So I guess like in terms of balls, like I pretty much most of the time walked Old Way, but at the same time when I'd be like Vogue and Femme, either like at the club or like in like at my friend's houses, just I guess like when we would just be like fucking around, because I guess I felt like more, I was just like exploring it and I felt more comfortable there. My body definitely felt different in those spaces, interestingly. And in more recent years, I've walked a couple of times, Vogue Femme. I think because I've just come to this place where I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going to walk what I feel like. But also, I think because it's also been something that even though I've been comfortable with Vogue and Femme for like a while, it's not something I've wanted to put myself in the space of competition, because there are pros and cons to that space. And it is like, even like with New Way as well, like, walking it at a ball is like kind of like different to all other aspects of doing it in a way, because like there you're going to like actually like compete and be judged and whatever. So like I would not walk New Way right now, but the way I found like I naturally move in some respects like has elements of like what like New Way. So yeah, I guess I'm just kind of in this space where at the balls, like I'll pick a category. When I'm teaching, I will clarify the categories. But I've just given myself permission to move however the fuck I want to move. I'll go in and out of like Vogue and two-step in. Like, I haven't got names for half the way I move. Interestingly, like people often ask if I have like a contemporary dance background, which I don't. Vogue was like the first time I kind of found anything, but like through opening up my body in this way, meeting others who like move in all these different ways, it's kind of been, I guess, something that I've learned through others in that language way, and also like just, I guess, discovered and awakened in myself. I feel like it's, I think something like my dad taught me about like focusing less on like learning something and more on like learning how to learn the thing, if that makes sense. So like as I've, yeah, I feel like I'm in a place with movement now where like if I actually put the time and effort in, I felt, especially like in more recent years, more clearly, there's like, it's definitely something moving through me. It's not something I'm doing. When I try to do, I feel blocked, struggle. But once I power through and just let go and get tired, there is something teaching me.
Well, I love what you said earlier about it's almost like you're trying to communicate in a language, a physical language, and it is, you know, you're telling a story with your body. I also would love to dig into something you said a minute ago about how you felt different about your body in the space you're in. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before, of the groups of people you spend time with, that can completely change the way you feel about your body in that moment.
Yeah.
And I'd love to ask a bit about like, what does it make you feel to be in that space? And how do you feel when you walk a ball?
It's really funny, like, cause like, yeah, asking that question, I have like, something came up in my mind where I remember I was telling someone how I, at South Bank Center, they have like a space, like a cloakroom foyer where like dancers could come and move about and not make too much noise. But essentially, like I was noticing how I was feeling uncomfortable moving in certain ways or feeling it more natural. Yeah, just noticing resistance and flow in terms of how I would move. For example, there I found it, I think, easier, especially when I was on my own, to do more kind of old way sort of movements. And I just use this in terms of comparative terms, like, but like masculine as opposed to like, say, feminine. For me, my old way is very much influenced by like martial arts and like almost like hip hop breaking vibes, like energy wise. And I was saying this to someone, and like, cause I was like feeling a bit, I was feeling some type of way about like, I was, yeah, struggling to like, just like be more feminine, say, in that space. But they said something along the lines of like, you know, you communicate differently with different people. So like, we're going to sit here and like talk in a certain way, but like the way I might sit and talk with someone else is going to be different. And no one is necessarily more or less authentic than the other. I guess it's just being honest in this space. And it's also like, I guess, yeah, it's making me also think of like something Brené Brown said about how, like, essentially people almost like earning the right to like receive like a certain part of you. Like, I'm not going to like necessarily go out to a stranger and just open up about like really intimate details about my sex life. I actually might, funny enough, more than, for example, because it's like, yeah, disclosure not being the same as vulnerability. So like me doing those movements in public is not necessarily the same as me doing them around a certain group of people. And yeah, when I'm in balls, I think it's just everything is a lot more exaggerated. So because there's a lot of energy, and I've realized like how sensitive I am to energy, that for me initially is often quite overwhelming. So I'm just very much like, I'll go around, get used to the space, like be like, oh, hey, 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 cool, cool. And then, you know, shit myself like 5 times, stuff as much food in myself as I can before I lose my appetite, drink loads of water, and then be like, go to the toilet for 5 minutes. So it's like a whole, it's almost like a trip where it's like a cleansing. And like I used to like resist that, I think, at first, both at balls and just in like large social situations, but have since been practicing just kind of sinking into, you know, if I feel kind of introverted, just being there, just being like, I don't have to interact with people, I don't have to speak to no one, I could just mind my business. I think what's challenging for me has been focusing, because if I'm focusing on walking, I can kind of do that. But then it's also, it's a social environment. It's like, you know, some people like only see at these places, and it's moving between those different energies, which has been challenging, but I've learned a lot. But yeah, at its best, it's like an amazing space to like, once I get into the flow, to be able to like feed off people's energy, to be in a space where people see you, understand you, support you. And, you know, even though some people at the same time are going to be like, whether you're battling or whether it's just because they ain't like you, they're going to be, they're not going to want you to succeed. But then it's almost feels just as good, if not better, to like be in that space of like, Okay, cool. All right, I care. What a, yeah, to be able to interact with that and just be in a space where you feel, like, just feel your best self. But yeah, at the same time, it can go either way. I think, yeah, I've often preferred moving in clubs because then I'd have to worry about the competition side of things. I think also with balls, yeah, there's so many elements to it. When I've gone to balls and I've not walked, it's also been equally as amazing. A ballroom isn't like where you just kind of sit beside and just do nothing. It's like very much like it gets you up, and the more you give people, the more they give you. So it's very much like an active spectator situation.
From an outside perspective, it does just seem like such a vibrant, ever-growing kind of beautiful community that just... It seems like a community like no other in so many ways, especially how you've shared, you know, so generously about your experience in there. But I love how the ball community just seems to be constantly evolving and like language changing with it. And it's, you know, it's a really special thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's like at least through the length of my journey, I came into it actually much like the kind of space I'm in now, whereas like almost like not instantly, but pretty much like a whole life makeover. Like the healing work I was doing, I was ready to move away from a lot of just energies in my life, which like, again, not specifically to do with people or places, but it was like, I guess I realized like looking back, I've done a lot of trauma bonding. Yeah, I guess like Vogue and like ballroom and everything became like, yeah, like most of my life, both in terms of like how I was discovering myself, like socially, how I was meeting other people, like the people I was hanging out with, the things that motivated me. Yeah. And I don't know. It's been an interesting journey because like everything, there's like pros and cons. There's like as much shadow as there is light. It's also when you also have like a group of people who have experienced, you know, trauma or challenges or oppression in their personal lives, and also in the systems that we're in, ballroom can be a space to like work that out and heal through it, but also that healing is often not so deliberate and very messy. And I think like over the years, like it's almost like every year, sometimes several times a year, I have this like massive like disillusionment where I'm like, oh shit, that's actually what's going on. And like, because we subconsciously project so much onto these things, like hopes and fears, realizing what's about me, realizing what's not about me. And even just like, yeah, the community or the scene here is, again, that's a whole feature length documentary coming soon. But yeah, it's very complicated and complex, I would say. I just don't want to rose tint it.
I think that's very important. It's, you know what, it's so good to show the light and the shade and everything, you know, that's life, isn't it? It's, life is complicated.
Yeah, and Vogue is, as they say, an evolution of shade. It's actually still like a battle form. So like even, yeah, it's interesting. I always think of it as like there's these two halves or these pillars which like contrast but also complement each other. You have the competition side, you know, the shade, the battling, the essentially based around the I am, like wanting to be better than someone else is the comparing. Yeah. Even if your approach to that, which mine often is, just ignoring them. And then you have the community side, which is like the house system, which is like, I didn't really mention earlier, but it's like, yeah, call it a ballroom. Because yeah, what we call houses, it varies from house to house, but it's some combination of like a family, a team, essentially like a team when you're on the floor, a family when you're off the floor. Like it's obviously both of these in both spaces, but it did originally start as like, literal houses where the mostly mothers, like so femme queens, drag queens, trans women were taking LGBT kids like literally off the street, like who'd been like kicked out their home, X, Y, and Z, taking them under their roof and raising them in their actual house. So yeah, this I guess idea of like, or this practice of queer family and support systems. Yeah, when you look at the house side of things and the competition side of things in the categories, like it is essentially a creating of things, like creating our own version of things that we have been excluded or restricted access to externally. which, yeah, I often find like quite ironic how much it at the same time as like transcending these other systems in a lot of ways, often then also like replicates it, which then, yeah, can also give you a way to heal and face and deal with these things. So like it can be like really vicious of balls before we even get into the politics, which is, yeah, people's personal fuckeries, and there's no objective judging obviously, but even just like objectively judging the categories like can be like really harsh. But then it can also give you a way to, I guess it's that thing of like encountering these things in a safer, not safe because there are no safe spaces, space outside of mainstream society, so that when you go out, so for example, I feel like if I see a group of people and they all look the same, like for me personally, that's a trigger. But like when I'm walking, or just walking down the street and I'm wearing, God forbid, a crop top, let alone anything else, or just X, Y, and Z, like I now literally put myself in the mindset of I'm at a ball, I'm walking runway, I'm focusing, I'm looking straight ahead. And it's a way then I can not just deny or shut out or avoid, but actually like go into like a feeling of strength and express a different part of myself in that moment, which I found for myself, yeah, really helpful, which a part of getting there has been getting chopped at balls.
So we really love to ask this question on the podcast, and feel free to kind of go as deep as you want to or not, like completely whatever you're comfortable with sharing, but we'd love to know a bit more about what your relationship was like with your body growing up.
I think it was like pretty much fine until like 11. I think like around 11 is, well, like I don't really have many memories before 7. Essentially I think like, yeah, I remember always being, I guess this counts, like being like teased for like my hair a lot, which I guess it's interesting. I feel like that's obviously about my body, but it was at a time where I didn't feel so separate from my body, or didn't like think of it in that way. So yeah, and I remember definitely like, I'm sure there's like times I definitely wanted like my body and my hair to be different. I'd like a white, still have, I don't, it's like hard to see, but like a white streak of hair in the middle. And you know, like the dumb things kids will like tease you for, and it's like, oh, it's this, oh, people like often like mistake me for a girl, which like didn't bother me so much, like the fact that they thought I was a girl, so much as it was like the making fun of it, or the, oh, I thought you were this, and it's like, well, I'm not, so here we are. But no, I think it was really secondary school when like I really definitely noticed wanting my body to be different. I used to hate my nose, I hate my forehead, skin color. I wanted to be, you know, Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yes.
Like, that was my role model for art. I was like, I want to be taller. I want to be at least 6 foot. I want to be skinnier. And I was even skinnier than now. Like, it was interesting. I would for a while, think I was fat or call myself fat, because that's what I had learned to equate with ugly. My hair was always like a source of, I didn't know what to do with it. I wanted to be different. I wanted to be like straight and blonde. Yeah, it was an interesting relationship with my body as well, actually. Like, as I'm saying this, I'm just remembering so much, which initially I might not attribute to body, but, like, obviously is. So I would, like, often self-harm as well, like, cutting, which, again, like, casting my mind back, I don't think it was so much around hating my body so much as using it to express my anger. But obviously there are, like, conscious and subconscious layers to that. I remember, like, deliberately choosing to start smoking regularly as like my way of, I think, somewhat being like fuck you to life, but also like inadvertently being like fuck you to myself, and like, because I didn't want to just, I didn't have the guts to just end it, or obviously the drive. And so this was kind of my like slow way of killing myself very consciously. And I think, funny enough, like in a way, depression, I think like a lot of these things for myself are just ways of, yeah, they're like a way, it's a way I like learn to cope with a certain, with life. So like it in a way helped me give less of a fuck. Like I wouldn't say that like I like started to love my body more, but I started to accept it in a way, or like resign myself to it and just be like, okay, cool. because I know there was definitely like a peak of just being like, oh my God, hating my body specifically. But then it started to dip. And it's funny, like fast forwarding to like now, I'm in a place where I'm learning to love my body in a more general sense. So like now it's less so about my body compared to other people's. Because like there's so many things I appreciate about my body, and there's I also appreciate the differences in other people's, but it's like accepting that my soul, my spirit is here in this physical mm-hmm. container. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just this whole thing of like, I am not my body, but I'm also not separate from it. I actually like right now healing from some like fresh tattoos. I got my hands retouched and these new ones on my face.
They're gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah, it's also interesting in terms of like my journey through like gender and sexuality and all of the things. There's definitely been times, like yeah, many times I've asked myself, you know, would a medical or surgical transition make me feel happier? I pretty much always get to the point where it's like, there's not one for what I feel. And yeah, I've been noting how like my tattoos in a way have been, I guess, my version of my transition in terms of, it's like as I engage more with my body and through either whether it's tattoo or through less permanent things, through, I don't know, like dancing, like voguing, sex, massage, bath, pleasure, chocolate, and how, yeah, like as I engage with it, I feel more a part of it. And it's interesting, the same practices can do the same thing. So like food is like I'm healing through a very addictive relationship. So at the same time, food can like bring so much like pleasure and connection with my body. I've also in the past used it a lot to distance myself from my body, like to numb.
It's so powerful, I think, in terms of how you're expressing all of this, because I think we project so much emotion onto our bodies, and so how we then relate to it can be so different. And it's how, as you said, like even just with food, it could be a positive thing, it could be a negative thing, but how much that connects with how we are feeling more broadly. But yeah, I just think that that's so powerful. And the whole thing about like your spirit, because I mean, we've met in person once, right? But I so remember first time I've been in a workshop for a couple of years, you came up to me, you sat right down beside me. I was a little bit like, I have not been in one of these spaces for a long time. And I was like, do I really fit here anymore? I'm not sure. But you came, you sat like right down, right beside me. And I think like we spoke for like, I don't know, like 5 minutes or something. But like just to have that like instantly open connection is something that I instantly feel that is a gift of yours. And then how through like the proximity of bodies, like you came down, you sat right down beside me. And then it's like, I don't know. I don't know really how to express it, but it's like how you kind of use your body as well to express who you are as well and connect with people.
Yeah, I guess that is something I've been, it's two interesting things you said, which made me think both. Yeah, like the body as like a tool in a sense, but also like it's like where I'm at, like where I am location wise, mm-hmm. not necessarily like I don't have to identify with it. But I often like paraphrase the Course in Miracles. I say paraphrase because I want to be quoted general. But like it talks about using the body like to communicate through, but not mm-hmm. to. So like reaching through mm-hmm. my body, through another person's body into them. And like this is like, yeah, these are like points where we meet. And also how, you know, like on the one hand, it's like we're, you know, I believe like we're all connected and like time and space is an illusion, but also to the extent that we are invested in this illusion, which like we all are to some extent being in these bodies, there is like a power in, say, like you said, physical proximity or the way, like I've definitely felt so viscerally like emotions release sometimes by doing mm-hmm. certain movements, mm-hmm. stretches, and I'm realizing just how much I've been like, this last couple of years have been like a really intense, like part of my, I guess, spiritual awakening. And it's been a lot coming up. And it's got very overwhelming at points where it's like, there's so much. But then this body, which like, and sometimes I find myself being frustrated with how simple or basic or restrictive it feels, but then I'm really just starting to just scratch the tip of the iceberg with how much information is stored mm-hmm. in here and how, you know, helpful it is to the same way we use a computer. Like there's so much in this computer mm-hmm. I don't understand. And it, do you know what I mean? Like how much information can come through it, through the internet, but we use it to communicate with other people. Likewise, in my body, it's like, I don't have to understand it all, but just kind of like trust it, accept it, use it. And to the extent that I allow myself to be open through it is, I guess, the extent that it will allow itself to be open, etc. It's exciting. It's interesting.
That's so beautiful.
I would love to ask, I saw that you had done some life modeling or life drawing. And we talk about that a lot on the show of how important, you know, like it can really improve your relationship with your body and just the kind of feeling of embodiment and also how other people see you. I'd love to ask how you got into that and how it makes you feel about yourself and in your body.
I will start kind of recent times and work backwards because it's, again, like it's one of those things. It's like whenever I start a chicken, I'm like, oh, but the egg came first and there was a chicken before that. I think I've only like life modeled once. And that was, yeah, so the first time a few weeks ago, through To Be or Not To Be Collective. I don't know what kind of drew me towards it, honestly. I think just like in this last couple of years, I'd really had time to just like explore new things and revisit old things in old ways and new ways and just, yeah, because like I've done sex work before on and off, and I've done, I guess I've like modeled informally, like I've like been the subject of photos and then also like performance wise. So like through all these things, had a explored using my body in like different ways publicly and privately. Also like in terms of nudity and like sexuality and just all these things. So yes, I've had exploration there. And I think just life modeling was like, yeah, just I think something I wanted to try. I think movement has been a, like exploring movement has been a really powerful way for me to discover a language which feels natural to me, because as much as I love words and enjoy the kind of dancing with words that is poetry, I guess like, yeah, dancing for me, like with the body, is just like poetry with your body. Yeah, it's funny, like often things have like only really clicked with me once I've like understood it in a movement perspective. And sometimes that's been things I can put words to, sometimes not. But yeah, I think the life modeling was a new and vulnerable thing for me, both to be, because I've noticed on shoots when I'm like just like posing stationary for photos, like I felt a lot more uncomfortable than like if I was like dancing. So like, I guess that's kind of out my comfort zone in that respect, even though ironically the movement style I do does involve posing. I think also, yeah, being like in a room full of people, like strangers, naked, and strangers that I was not about to have sex with, because I think there is for me like a certain level of comfort or power or X, Y, and Z that I feel like I have had more experience with in like sexual encounters than if I'm just like walking out in the street naked.
Yeah.
And not just to be, because I walk around my house naked, so like even if there's like guests over, I'm just very much like, hey. But then when it's like, okay, cool, I'm standing in front of you and like have to just be there. I think it was one of those things that I think it was like with many things, the scariest part was everything up until that point. And then once I'm there, it's kind of like, oh. I think also like one of my deepest fears, which is like very like nuanced, but like is like getting a boner in public. So then once I was there, I was like, I beg this not be the time. Which like both literally but also symbolically I've realized has been related to like shame around my sexuality. And what was I think really powerful for me was like, yeah, that part of it, like the maybe more obvious part, like, you know, being a naked in the room and posing. Although because yeah, you move from pose to pose and it's like you do like say a few 1 minute poses at the beginning. So like I quickly through like moving was able to like really like get into my body and move from that space of being aware of, initially often I'm like focused on what the other people are seeing, like when I'm feeling watched versus when I'm focused on what I'm feeling, what I'm presenting, you know what I mean? And yeah, so I guess coming into like a more first person experience. But then seeing the artwork people did, I think was almost the more powerful part for me. Both seeing how differently people, the different aspects of me people captured from like one position. And that was really powerful, both to see myself in A, different ways, B, in terms of like ways I didn't know people even saw, and C, just it was also inspiring from a drawing perspective, because that's something I've been rediscovering for myself. But it was like one I loved so much. It was like, it just captured such a specific aspect of myself, which I couldn't even put into like anything beyond drawing. I would definitely recommend it 100%. And yeah, you don't, like you can also like life model in your pants, so you'd have to like jump straight in. But there is something about being, as you are naked, vulnerable and open with your body, so too that will have an effect with your mind, with your emotions, whether immediate or direct or not.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about it. And funnily enough, both Honey and I have life modeled as a one-off. So we're in the club. Very comfortable, like just taking our clothes off. Ronz, we could talk to you all day and just have loved this conversation. But yeah, I think probably time to wrap up. And just to end, we'd love to know, for us and but also for our listeners, how we can support you and support what you're doing, or just champion you in general.
Because of the space travel I'm about to be embarking on, I have like no plans for anything past Friday. So the best way is to, I guess, follow me on Instagram, which like if I'm ever doing stuff, it'll be on there. So it's growing through it, like going through it, but just with an R.
And we'll just all send you good luck for your move.
Yeah, yeah, all the good energy coming your way through Zoom.
Basking in it.
And the sun now has like suddenly come out. So I
hey, oh my god, you truly, you're in that like a golden hour.
Yeah.
What happened? I was pissing it down a second ago.
I know, but it's out and I can just do the light shining through.
We're living vicariously through you. Ronz, thank you so much again. You are an angel and thank you for sharing. It was so wonderful.
Thank you so much for listening to the Body Protest podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and it would mean the world to us if you could rate, review, share, and subscribe.
You know what to do. And if you're left wanting more, why not check out our new Patreon for some exclusive bonus content? You can now also drop us an email at thebodyprotest@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced by the sensational Daisy Grant, and our dreamy music is by Eve Garland. And our new Knowledge Noodle jingle is by Zane Morris.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.